This is Leader ReadyCast, a monthly podcast featuring real-world lessons, best practices, and action-oriented insights for the you're-it moments when you're called upon to lead. Leader ReadyCast is the official podcast of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, a joint program of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and the Center for Public Leadership at the Harvard John F. Kennedy School of Government. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Hi, I'm Eric McNulty, and welcome to Leader ReadyCast. So you step into a new leadership role. You want to establish your presence, unify your followers, build confidence with those who promoted you, make it clear what needs to be accomplished. You're going to set a tone. That's a really tall order. It's a lot to accomplish. Now, some people get it just right. We all know about Lincoln and Churchill and Kennedy and Reagan. And more recently, I think of Marriott CEO Arne Sorenson's message to employees early in COVID. He had encouraged them in the face of a pandemic and also revealed to them that he was battling cancer. I believe that's still available on YouTube. And if it is, you should go watch it. It's a tremendous lesson in how a CEO can communicate with authenticity. And then also in the pandemic was New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, who rallied her nation. And they were very tough to lock down, but she did it in a very humane and humble way that really, really brought people together. And of course, Michelle Obama, for example, brought down the House at the Democratic National Convention in 2024. So some people hit it right on the head. And then some, of course, don't. And of course, those names are ones we don't as easily recall. Now, it's been said that leadership is communication and communication is leadership. So how do you rise to the occasion? How do you ready yourself for this sort of daunting challenge? I'm joined today by Donna Rubin, founder of Speech Studio. She's a former award-winning journalist who has become a sought-after leadership communications coach, consultant, and speechwriter. She's also compiled an outstanding collection of speeches delivered by American women, Speaking While Female. I've asked her to join me to discuss how to find your voice as a leader. Donna Rubin, welcome to Leader ReadyCast.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
I'm looking forward to the conversation. Now, let's start by assuming that I'm a new client. I'm ascending the ranks of my organization, yet a little uncertain about my public speaking skills. How would you start to work with me?
Well, first of all, we need to establish who you are. What is your background? What's your expertise? What kind of pivotal experiences, formative experiences have you had? You know, there's no mail order leader and there's no mail order speech communications coach. Every individual comes from somewhere and is going somewhere else. And no, in case you're wondering, AI is not going to replace a communications or leadership coach, no more than it's going to replace a human being. So where do you go from, where do you come from, and where are you headed? What are your goals? That's what we really need to establish. And I think the role of a leadership coach and a communications coach is to work with their client to answer those questions in the most honest, candid way that you can. So people talk a lot about finding your voice or claiming your voice. You know, Melinda Gates said a few years ago, she had finally found her voice. Lots of people have said that. It's a metaphor, of course, to find your voice, suggesting that you're actually finding yourself in a larger sense, finding your ability to speak out authentically about who you are. But it's not something you find under a rock or, you know, in a chest or the back of a closet or something. Your voice is an expression of who you are, your expertise, and importantly, your values. So the role of a good communications consultant is to work with their principal, with their client, to explore those avenues of the individual and figure out who they are really and what they want to say.
That's great. And I would think when you explore that, where you're from and where you want to go and think through your values, that must give you a certain amount of confidence that helps you, whether you have quote unquote found the voice or claimed it or whatever the word is, but that allows you to step into it and use it effectively. Am I reading you correctly?
Yes, you are. And of course, you referred earlier to my work with women speakers and my historical work. I've published a book, Speaking While Female, 75 Extraordinary Speeches by American Women. And I also created an online archive, the Speaking While Female Speech Bank, with thousands, I mean, thousands, many thousands of speeches by women from antiquity to the present. And I think it is harder for women to do that work of owning or claiming or stepping up to use their voice in aggregate. Not every woman and not every man who ascends to a leadership position or aspires to automatically has a strong voice, but it is in aggregate harder for women. So the work I've been doing has been focused on helping women claim or find or identify what it is they want to say and how they want to say it in the world.
That's great, and I think it can be so easy to get caught up and trip over in some ways the mechanics of how to do this, as you say, sort of the mail order approach of how to speak effectively. But in my work, I see that leaders both need to be true to themselves, but they also need to be the leader that the followers need them to be in any given moment. There are times to be very demonstrative. There are times to be supportive. There are times to be inspirational. There are times to be tough. How do you encourage authenticity in ways that are right for the audience in the moment, and yet, firmly rooted in the person and the authenticity of the speaker? And is there such a thing as being too authentic?
Interesting. I don't think I would phrase it like that. I mean, authenticity is not something that you can turn on and off, right? Like you are who you are. But there is an appropriate time and place for how we all present ourselves. Of course, leaders have to be true to themselves. You have to be true to yourself. And if your values do not align with the organization that's paying your salary, then you have to look for a new employer or else just keep your mouth shut. But if you do that, you will miss an opportunity to lead. So I am not a big believer in bringing your whole self to work if that means speaking out or taking opportunities to express things that are not in accordance with the values or the goals of your organization. If you sign up to work in an organization, you need to be in alignment with those values. But once you're in that position, I believe it is your responsibility. It's an opportunity, and it's also a responsibility to put your knowledge, your expertise, your ideas, your creativity, into the world, in the world of that organization. And that's both internally and externally. Internally, within the organization, at team meetings, at client meetings, at board meetings, intranet, everywhere that the organization comes together to explore ideas together, and externally in the so-called marketplace of ideas, to use your voice to share your experience at conferences, at external facing events. And the more you use your voice, the more you acquire confidence that your voice matters, that you make an important contribution, and also the more you spotlight your own leadership and leadership potential.
The work of the MPLI, the work that we do day in and day out, focuses on crisis leadership, which I think can be one of the most daunting challenges for leaders. What are some of the potential communications pitfalls or opportunities you see during those high stress, high stakes moments? I've seen, for example, executives who seem to, they're so concerned about legal liability, they come across as very stiff. They sort of forget to express empathy after people have been injured or killed. Or they get, the lawyers, they have given them something to read, and it comes across, as you say, it's not aligned with their values. It isn't really them speaking. Their lips are moving, but it doesn't feel like it's a real human being who's speaking. So how do you navigate that space?
That's a good question, and it is a real problem, and it's not diminishing, it's only growing. We have a famously horrifically litigious society, and it's even growing more so. But I think the answer is quite simple, really. It's a lack of preparation. The biggest mistake that I see people make at all levels of an organization, but especially at the top, when you are the figurehead and the spokesperson, and when people look to you to respond in a crisis situation, lack of preparation. So it's not a matter of whether things will go wrong, it's when will things go wrong, because they always do in varying degrees. So having your ideas lined up, being able to express your organizational goals, your values, knowing what you want to say, right? Having talking points, scripts, all that is very important, and it's baseline communications preparation. Every leadership team should have that. And it's not about being fake or scripted or inauthentic. It's about being prepared. That's something every leader and aspiring leader should script together along with his or her communications team. And if you have that language worked out, that will free you up to express the emotional component. And emotion is critical in a crisis because in a crisis, people, I mean, they just are, they are emotional. We are creatures of intellect and emotion. So being able to relate and connect as a human being on an emotional level is key during a crisis, but you also have to have, of course, the other more objective talking points lined up, ready to go.
Yeah, I think it is so important not to forget that it is that human element that we are both in, have both intellect and emotions, which together are how we navigate the world, and you can't deal in one without the other. And
Sure,
then I
you
also
can.
know, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. You can if you want. You can if you want to come across as a powerful leader. I mean, charisma has a component of emotion. Nobody's charismatic who has no warmth. A charismatic leader has human warmth, conveys human warmth. And we may not all aspire to be charismatic. That may not, be the way that we phrase what we aspire to when we want to be leaders, but that it is an important component, being able to project human warmth and emotion.
No, absolutely. And as you, the preparation piece you mentioned is so important because I think that for whatever reason, I don't know if it's Dunning-Kruger effect or people think it's going to come naturally when they step in front of the crowd or step in front of the camera, but it doesn't if you're not prepared. And I know that we have mutual friends at the Darden School at the University of Virginia. I serve on their Leadership Communications Council. And one of the things the head of that council said to me was that when MBAs are coming through, the two hardest courses to get them to take are organizational behavior and management communications. And 10 years later, when they come back for exec ed, the two courses they can't wait to take are organizational behavior and management communications, because they learn that that communication piece is so important to getting things done. And it's not just about writing the business case or developing the strategy, but you've actually got to be able to influence people. You've got to be able to bring them or rally them around a common cause, and move them to want to follow you.
That is so interesting, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I used to teach management communications at the Stern School at NYU in New York City. It was the MBA program, and it was a required course that every student who graduates from that program, not from the NYU Business School, but from the executive education program, they had to take management communication, and inevitably, the students would put it off for the final quarter. They didn't want to take it. They wanted to take, pipeline. They wanted it to stop. They didn't want to take it. They wanted to take any number of other subjects, but they did not want to take communication. I don't know whether they thought it was a fluff course or they thought it was going to be not a good use of their time. But in the end, in the evaluations, over and over and over, people said, "I'm so sorry, I put this off to the end. I should have taken this at the beginning of the program, not at the end of the program."
Absolutely, because it will help you in every other course you take. Just as it, these, the skills you build this way are so useful in so many settings beyond just giving an interview or giving a speech. Now, you mentioned earlier, you talked a little bit about your work around women speaking in public or public speaking. And what are some of the challenges that women face as communicators, more specifically? I mean, and how do you help your clients come forward to make sure they are the strong, powerful speakers they need and want to be?
Well, I think that women do face different challenges from men. They just do. It's rather obvious, and for two main reasons that I can see. First is we are socialized differently. Women and men are socialized differently. We all know this. I mean, women are not socialized, educated, encouraged to put our ideas into the world. By socialized, I mean education, the media, role models, what we get affirmed for, how we set our goals, the messages that we absorb. But The good news is that is changing. We can see that changing all around us as more and more women move into visible leadership positions. It's not static, but traditionally, women have not been encouraged to put their voices in the world, and that makes it harder. It just makes it harder for them to do that. So that's one reason that they haven't been socialized. And the other is that women get criticized more when they do speak up. And it's that should be rather obvious too, to anybody who watches the political landscape, who watches the, corporate communications. When women speak, they are criticized or critiqued for how they speak, their tone of voice, how they communicate, their clothing. We all know this. It's rather tired even to suggest it, but it's still going on. So for those two reasons, women and men don't face the same landscape. It's not a level playing field. But the good news is that it's changing. So I do think that younger women won't put up with that anymore. I see many, many, many more younger women unafraid to step up and use their voices. But I also want to say that women are still socialized in our society to be ornamental objects. I mean, just look at Kanye West showing off his naked wife, Bianca Censori, at the Grammys. I mean, what really? What was that all about? Well, he stands there in opaque black, and she's completely naked and objectified and vulnerable. I mean, I know it's not corporate communications, but that sends a message to young women. And I just feel like I have to call that out because that's not the message that we want our young women to be growing up with and aspiring to find their proper place in the world.
So, how do you help people overcome some of that conditioning, that socialization, to get comfortable bringing their voice forward?
Well, I specifically help women to name and claim their expertise. I make them say out, write down and say out loud, this is who I am and this is my expertise. And it is astonishing that a woman can have multiple advanced degrees, have written books, and still be hesitant to call herself an expert. There's something about the word expert that a lot of women have trouble using. And so there, I have exercises. I make my attendees at my many workshops use that language. I am an expert. Here's how I put my expertise into the world. Here's what I know that other people do not know and other people need to know. It's rather simple sounding, but it can be quite challenging to pull off.
No, that's good. That's again, I think it sounds like a really interesting exercise and again a way to claim your space. I know when I first started, I was sort of thrown onto a stage without a lot of preparation and was scared to death. And you have to learn how to claim that space, and understand why you're there. And if they've asked you to be on the stage, you're there for a reason, right? There's a certain amount of expertise somebody saw in you that they expect you to be able to communicate to others. So
That's true. And it's also true that if you're not on the stage, you should be.
yeah.
There is a place for you on that, metaphorical stage, whatever the stage is. Your knowledge belongs in the world. We have a ton of problems right now in the world, governmental problems, planetary problems, climate problems. We have a lot of problems, and we're only going to address those problems with the best ideas. And women's knowledge, all of our knowledge needs to be in the mix.
So, tell us a bit more about your book, Speaking While Female. I'm a big fan of reading speeches because I think done well, there's so much the thought that goes into them, as much as the delivery. But there's a lot of deep thinking there. And tell me about the book, how you put it together. Are there some of your favorite? What are some of your favorites that are in there?
Right. Well, it started with the archive that I mentioned earlier, the Speaking While Female archive. But just to go back prior to that, as a speak speeching as a speaker, but prior to that, as a speaking coach, I but prior to that, as a speech writer, I began to notice that men were frequently quoted in speeches, from Cicero to Gandhi to Churchill, JFK, RFK. MLK, Billy Graham, it was always men who were quoted in speeches and almost never women. And in fact, I start out a lot of my talks by asking, what women can you quote? And very few people raise their hand. If they can quote a woman, It's always a very recent woman, like a Michelle Obama or a Hillary Clinton, but almost nobody can quote a woman from earlier than that. And that's when I realized that the history books have almost completely overlooked women speakers. But women, through their public voices, have been as instrumental as men in shaping our values and the course of history. And so I decided that my mission was going to be to change the way we think about who spoke in history. So I created this archive, this online archive, and out of that came the book Speaking While Female, 75 Extraordinary Speeches by American Women. Women like, for example, Clara Shortridge Foles. She was the first female attorney on the West Coast. And in 1894, she gave a speech in Chicago, making the legal and the moral, the ethical argument for a public defender system, a publicly sponsored, financed system of legal representation for criminal defendants, because it's no crime to be poor. It's engraved on our Supreme Court building, equal justice under law, and everybody deserves equal representation. So she's considered the founder of the public defender system, and her expertise came out of her lived experience, out of what she experienced in the courtroom when she watched criminal defendants get steamrolled by the prosecutors without having the ability to defend themselves. But you asked about some other women. I mean, women like Dolores Huerta, who spoke out for farm workers' rights, or Fannie Lou Hamer, who spoke out for voting rights for Black Americans in the South. I mean, the list goes on and on. Helen Gahagan Douglas, who spoke out against Senator Joseph McCarthy during the Red Scare in the 50s. I mean, he was a liar and she called him out. And on and on and on. I mean, there's 75 speeches in the book, but I could have done a book easily with twice as many.
Well, and that's why you have the archive, which is such a tremendous resource. And thank you for that. And I encourage our listeners to go just peruse and see. I think you'll find an amazing amount of inspiring and informative content there, and enlightening. The more we know about our history, the more diverse we realize it has been. And you're right; things get shaped down to a certain set of accepted narratives that, and we don't often look further unless somebody like yourself opens our eyes a bit and points us in the right direction. So, my final question for you is the one I ask each one of my guests. What gives you hope?
What gives me hope? Well, I alluded to this earlier. I would say that it gives me hope that I see more young women speaking out. I do. I mean, there is generational change, there's social generational change, and there are more young women's voices in the mix. Some of them I agree with, some of them I don't agree with. It doesn't matter what I think. I'm heartened to see them putting their voices in the world. But in general, I see more young people just collectively speaking out, realizing that it takes many voices and many kinds of people to advance our culture and our society. You know, the past is prelude to the present, but the future is able to be changed. The future can be different. If we have our imaginations, our expertise, our knowledge, our passion, and our voices in the mix, we can create a different future for ourselves. So I really do believe in the power of voice and the power of human voice, and I look to young people to lead us in the future.
And that indeed is a hopeful way to end this episode. So my guest has been Donna Rubin, founder of Speech Studio and the author of Speaking While Female, 75 Extraordinary Speeches by American Women. You can learn more about her work at speech.studio. Donna, thank you so much.
It has been a real pleasure. Thank you, Eric.
This has been another episode of Leader ReadyCast from the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and find out more about us at npli.sph.harvard.edu. Follow us on Twitter at @HarvardNPLI. Thanks for listening, and be ready to lead.